I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show.
Hi, this is Howard Jacobson. I am delighted to be on the phone today with Miyoko Shinner of artisanveganlife.com. Hello, Miyoko.
Hi, Howard. Nice to talk to you again.
Likewise. So we met at a vegan blogging conference a couple of weeks ago, and I was lucky enough to win the swag bag that included your book, Artisan Vegan Cheese. And I have to say, so I've made three different batches, and I'm ready to nominate you for a Nobel Prize.
Oh, wonderful. Is there one in the vegan cheese category?
There should be.
There should be, yeah.
Or I've got to say that your air-dried Gouda is at least as important for human civilization as literature.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right, you know, and if everyone can make it, it would stop fighting.
So in this interview, I want to talk to you about what you do and your path. But I do have to say, from looking at the photos on your website and then doing the cheese tasting at a gala that I attended, you've really changed my mind about what is possible in terms of plant-based food, and not just plant-based food, because we all know there's lots of stuff out there that's fake this, fake that, fake meat, fake cheese, but your stuff is pretty much whole food, plant-based, like actually really nutritious and unbelievably different from certainly the late 1970s lentil loaf fare that I grew up thinking that vegetarians ate.
Oh, absolutely. That's exactly the reason I wrote that book. And I do eat a whole foods, plant-based diet. And I don't like to have processed food unless I'm, even vegan processed food unless I'm at a vegan bloggers conference where they're shoving that stuff down our throat. Of course, I enjoy it for the moment. But generally speaking, the only kind of food that makes me feel good are the ones that are whole, real food, things that grow from the ground and are as unadulterated as much as possible. So vegetables, nuts, seeds, legumes, whole grains. So I just felt there's got to be a way to obtain those really rich flavors that I loved so much before I became a vegan, using whole plant-based foods. And that's how the cheese book came about.
So let's start there with what were you eating before you made your transition? What was your and what was your relationship to food? Did you always know you were going to be a chef?
Well, I became a vegetarian when I was 12, and I started cooking shortly thereafter. So I was a lacto-ovo vegetarian for the first 15 years or so of when I switched my diet at the age of 12, and so I transitioned to veganism sort of in my mid to late 20s. But until then, I had a diet that was very rich in dairy products. And I just love French cuisine. And so, whatever it was, butter, tons of butter and heavy cream and cheese of every sort filled my meals, morning, noon, and night. That's kind of what I ate.
So what led you to the transition to remove all that incredibly important and, you know, delicious stuff from your diet?
Oh, I just realized it wasn't very healthy. And it just, at some point I realized, you know, I lived in Japan, so I didn't have a lot of access to information about, the ethics of raising livestock. So I was really looking at it purely from a plant, from a health standpoint, and it just occurred to me one day, you know, this can't be healthy. And I looked around at the Japanese. I was living in Japan at the time, and they were all healthy, and they were not gorging themselves on dairy products like I was. And there was just a wake-up call one day. I thought, wow, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. And so I got rid of it. I got rid of most of it. You know, the transition took a little while. It wasn't like overnight I stopped eating dairy products, but I started getting rid of it as much as possible. And then it was, well, how am I going to make the same dishes? And that's really when I became sort of a vegan chef, because I've been cooking all those years, but until I had a need to replicate those flavors that I loved so much, I didn't really have a need to experiment. So back in the mid-80s or so is when I really, really delved into vegan cooking.
So it was actually the constraint that caused you to start flexing your chef muscles.
That's exactly right. Yeah, yeah.
So when you say you realized it was unhealthy, can I ask if you were having sort of personal health issues, or is it sort of a generalized, realization?
You know, it was really a generalized realization. I was in my, early to mid-20s at the time, so I didn't have any health problems. I was pretty healthy. I don't really remember what the exact trigger was, but I think I somehow made that connection between cholesterol and overall health. And, you know, I hadn't been to the doctor in years, so I really can't say, oh, my cholesterol numbers went from, 230 to 127 or something. But I do know after in my late 20s was probably the first time I actually had my cholesterol count, and this is in Japan, and I found out it was like 127 or something like that. Or maybe it was lower, I can't remember. I wasn't a complete vegan at the time, and so I didn't have any basis of comparison. But the biggest thing was I used to have these chronic stomach aches. And I noticed about, several months after I got dairy out of my diet, I no longer have these stomach aches. And I finally made that connection. Gee, maybe I wasn't supposed to eat all that stuff to begin with. There's just like 90% of the human population has allergies to dairy without even knowing about it. And it may, just because you don't have an immediate reaction doesn't mean that, you don't have chronic issues that can be resolved by getting rid of that dairy.
So when you decided to become a chef, so I know, I've met a lot of, cookbook authors and a lot of chefs. You're actually the person who has kind of gone farthest in experimentation and trying to create things that have never existed before. Where do you think that came from?
Thank you so much. It comes from hubris. I'm joking, but I have this. It's like, okay, I want to have this. Well, and it doesn't exist. It's like, okay, well, I'm just going to figure out how to make it. And sometimes I put the cart before the horse, where I will tell people I'm going to make. It's like, oh yeah, I know how to make this, and I absolutely have no idea whatsoever. So I have to now, prove that I can make it. So I have to. This will lead me into many months in the kitchen experimenting. So I've made all kinds of promises to people about things that, in fact, the cheese book came along because of that too. I told somebody that I was, I had all these cheeses and I actually didn't. I had to make good on my word there. But I don't know. But thank you for your compliment. I don't know if that's true that I've gone further than anybody, but that's a very sweet thing for you to say. I really like classic flavors. In my early 20s, I was living in Japan, and I was eating all this phenomenal food back in Japan they were kind of ahead of the curve in terms of the food revolution, you know, in the early 80s or so. And I just got spoiled rotten with the all the fabulous options that were available, even as a vegetarian there. And, you know, once you get used to a certain flavor profile, you just want to be able to replicate it. And I had come from being a vegetarian in the 70s when I was eating lentil loaf. So when I discovered the world of French and Italian cuisine, I just couldn't look back. So I've kind of gone down that path ever since, but from a plant-based point.
Mm. So were you classically trained as a chef? Because when I go through the artisan vegan cheese book, I'm just amazed at, you know, tapioca flour and you know, agar and things like, if I tried to make mozzarella in my kitchen, I would probably start a fire or blow something up before I produced anything. Like, where did you get your palate of even things to try?
Oh, well, you're really sweet. You know, tapioca and agar, those are ingredients that are in many, many vegan pantries. So a lot of people use those things. But, you know, I just try to remember, what was this texture like? If I come up with I try to create a new recipe, I always think, okay, you know, do I have any recollection of the flavor and the texture? And then I try to figure out, what can I use to replicate those? I don't know. It's not, you know, some people have called me a food scientist. I'm not. I mean, I haven't been classically trained as either a chef or a food scientist, although I've had very, very good, mentors. You know, I was, when I was learning how to cook to begin with, I interned for a friend of mine who was a trained chef, and she had a catering company, and, I learned a lot about classic French cuisine from her. All vegetarian. She wouldn't, you know, she realized that I was a vegetarian, so I didn't help her with any of the meat items. But so I learned a lot about baking and cooking from her, and then I worked in a bakery when I was younger, so I learned from him. There was a Swedish baker there, so I learned a lot of baking techniques from him. So I've had some training, although not in a school setting. I don't know. It's like some people have a knack for playing music. I have a knack for cooking. Mm-hmm. We'll put it that way. Yeah.
Right. And also, you know, I love what you said about hubris, but I'm also, you know, reading through your website and having met you, there's also a lot of humility there around, you know, this buffalo mozzarella that I made was good, but one omnivore said it wasn't right. And I said, you know, deep down, I know he's right. Like, there must be, you know, a part of you that's very willing to acknowledge this isn't perfect yet, because I'm sure, I don't know, I guess you've gone through, like, maybe hundreds of iterations of some of these recipes trying to get it right.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, I always want to make the best food, and I'm always trying to emulate myself. And you know, I know when something isn't good. I mean, you know, 3/4 of the food that I make, I would never put in a cookbook. I wouldn't serve it to guests. I mean, you know, you come home from work and you're tired and you slap some dinner together. I mean, would I take a picture of it and put it on? I wouldn't even take a picture and put it on Facebook. I mean, to be honest, you know, I mean, we can't all create masterpieces all the time. And it's hard work. That's really what it's about. I mean, you know, people have a knack for different things. I have a knack for cooking, but in addition to the knack is really just a lot of hard work behind it. And the fact, yeah, most of the stuff that I make, I would not put in a cookbook. I don't think it's past the cookbook test or even a blog test. You know, I really have to I have to meet a certain standard before I'm willing to publish it or put it out to the public.
Right. And I love that people are going to hear that, because I think it'll give people, you know, a feeling of what they're doing is okay. Like, I remember I have a friend who was a chef, and I was going to cook a meal. We were going to get together, our families, and I was going to cook a meal, and I was sweating. I was so nervous. And, you know, and I ended up making, you know, I didn't have the time to do anything fancy, luckily, and I just made this very sort of basic meal. And he loved it. And I kept apologizing. He's like, no, man, I don't want to eat restaurant food all day.
Yeah, no, I absolutely, and I don't either, you know. I mean, there are only certain recipes that I would serve at any sort of, you know, like I used to have a restaurant in the past, or you know, to a dinner party, but on a daily basis, I mean, even my cheese is made from largely from nuts, which are very, very high in fat, and it's very rich food. I don't want to eat my cheese on a daily basis. I want to eat, you know, I mean, I want to eat veggies and grains, you know. Very simple. So.
Yeah, although I have to say it's hard to keep the your cheese around once I make it. It seems everyone's coming up with things to spread it on.
Oh, well, that's good.
Well, I mean, luckily, there's four of us liking it, so no one's taking the lion's share of the fat hit.
That's good. It's being equally shared. So
the first thing I read on your website is that you mostly cook for omnivores. So why is that significant or important for you?
Well, it's important because I don't want my food to be just good enough for vegans, if that makes sense. You know, I think once you eat a plant-based diet, your taste buds change. And you have, in some cases, you know, you're happy with certain foods that other people would turn their nose up to. And so because I cook mainly from omnivores, meaning that around me are mostly omnivores. I mean, although I have vegans around me as well, I would say, you know, 90% of the people that I cook for that come into my home as guests or friends or whatever happen to be, those who eat everything. And I want the food, I want to reach out to the omnivores. I don't want to just cook for vegans. I want to cook for people that might say, wow, that's really good. Gee, I might look a little bit more into veganism. Mm-hmm. Wow, if that's what vegan food tastes like, I could be vegan. So that's important to me. It's important to me that my food is just good food, not, you know, good for being vegan.
Mm-hmm. So it's part of your outreach.
It is part of my outreach, yeah. And I get, you know, the other day I did a fundraiser for a local homeless program out here, and they had a big, you know, one of these big galas, and I was one of two chefs that were making appetizers to serve the crowd, and the other chef was just a restaurant chef, so, you know, regular food, and I was making vegan stuff, mostly cheese-based dishes, and people just kept coming back for more. So here's a group of people that are, all omnivores, no one's a vegan in that crowd, and they're just like, wow, I can't believe this is vegan, and this is so fantastic. And those are the people that I want to plant a seed in, because they taste my food and they love it. They're going to, you know, the next time they come across a vegan cookbook or a vegan meal or a vegan idea, they're going to go, huh, maybe this is something I can explore.
Mm. And the, you know, the energy that I've gotten from you is that you're only in favor of things. You're not really against anything. So I don't feel like there's a, you know, you're promoting a plant-based diet as opposed to making people feel bad if they're eating some other kind of diet.
You're absolutely right. I don't think that works at all. I mean, the negative thing, you know, you're bad because you're eating, you know, you're causing animal suffering, blah, blah, blah. I just don't think that works. I think you win more converts. I mean, when people are ready for the message, they're going to get it. There's enough information out there to get the message, you know, for whatever reason, environmental impact, animals, you know, your own health, whatever it is, there's enough information all over the Internet, all over everywhere. So they're going to get that. But what people... You know, there's kind of a weird perception of vegans out there in the omnivore world. I mean, a lot of omnivores really do think vegans are kind of wacky, you know, or they eat funny stuff. I mean, it really is true, because I talk to these people all the time, and they don't really think, a lot of times they don't even know what we eat. They'll go, oh, so you can't have bread?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they think vegan means, you know, you're gluten-free or whatever.
Right, now that's your paleo friends.
So whatever the perception is out there, the one thing that speaks to everybody is is how something tastes. Good food speaks to everybody. And so if you can, you know, just check this food out there, good vegan food out there, and it just happens to be plant-based and happens to be Whole Foods plant-based, not made out of a bunch of, you know, I'm not a promoter of processed vegan food. I mean, you can see that in my cookbook. I don't use any processed foods in there, but, you know. Other than, I guess, unless you talk about like tapioca flour, which is ground up tapioca.
Right. Well, my rule is if I can make it in my kitchen, then it's okay.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And that's kind of where I am too. So, who was it? Somebody had this great expression. If it grows from plants, use it. If it comes from a plant, don't use it.
I like that.
So, yeah.
So, you know, one of the contributions I see you making is for people who are, you know, omnivores, who are peering in to the plant-based world through the window, they're seeing something really appealing, really familiar, that they don't have to, you know, give it up forever. They can still get the same experience, the same richness, the same joy from it. How do you advise people who come to you, who have that realization, and then they want to transition?
You know, I usually, well, how do I advise them?
Maybe you don't.
Yeah, I don't know if I advise them. I usually encourage them, and if they want, you know, recipes or websites, I try to encourage them to, you know, I will let them know about other sources. I'll cook for them, things like that. I guess the only advice I do give people is if I do, you know, if somebody comes to me is, well, try to, you know, so many people will say, oh yeah, you know, I'm becoming a vegan. I was so inspired and I went out and bought all these meat substitutes I don't discourage them entirely, but I try to show them that there's a lot of stuff they can do on their own at home that uses less processed, you know, less isolated soy protein and just less processed food in general. Because, you know, it's definitely better for the environment to and for animals to eat soy burgers instead of, you know, hamburgers perhaps. But I don't know. I mean, it's still processed food. And I really encourage cooking, you know, getting into your kitchen, rolling up your sleeves, and making real, honest, plant-based food.
Right. So I'm looking at, I'm on Amazon now, looking at Japanese cooking, which I guess was your first cookbook?
No, that was my second
cookbook.
Your
second.
Okay. Yeah. And yeah, I looked that out of print now. That came out in 1990. So that was almost 24 years ago.
Wow.
When my first cookbook came out. Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at the table of contents here, and you know, noodles, meals in a pot, meals in a bowl, and I'm thinking about my prejudice is without all the, you know, the beef stock or the fish stock, it's not going to taste right, and I guess that was probably your the place you started, right?
Well, there is a long tradition of amazing, phenomenal vegan cooking in Japan in the temples, in the Buddhist temples, because they have to have a vegan diet. It's called Shojin Ryori, which and so that has it. You know, there's a thousands year old tradition. If you ever go to Japan, go to a temple and that serves this type of cuisine and be prepared for the most amazing meal of your life. It'll, you know, be prepared to be there for 3 or 4 hours, because that's how long it takes. So you can do phenomenal things just with plant-based ingredients for Japanese cooking as well, and you can get the same sorts of flavors. In fact, I should tell you, I just had a group from Japan. They're opening up a vegan restaurant in Kyoto, and they came to study with me for a week just about a couple of months ago, in fact. They were here for a week, and I, you know, taught them how to make vegan food, including some Japanese dishes. They were really, really amazed as to how, you know, it was possible to capture the same rich flavors of either cuisine using all plant-based materials. Anyway.
So even though it's 23 and a half years old, it still has something to teach us. Or at least...
Oh, that book's not 23 and a half years old. That book's only, I don't know, 15 years old.
Okay.
It's been out for a while. I had another book that was written years ago. Yeah. So, yeah, I've been writing books for a long time. I'm just not the most prolific one on the planet. But, yeah, I started writing books before internet, before, you know, the word vegan was common. So, in fact, for my very first book, we didn't put vegan on the cover at all because the publisher didn't feel that that would help sell it. So we avoided, you know, we avoided any mention of vegan or vegetarian.
Right. Well, yeah, I feel like that's a really smart way in. You know, if someone has a great meal, they may not even register that there's not a big slab of meat in the middle of the plate.
That's exactly true. Yeah, yeah.
So I know a lot of people, you know, look for it, and can't imagine the plate without that.
Right.
You know, the meat, the starch, and maybe a little bit of green stuff that goes back into the kitchen.
Well, we just have to show them. That's,
right.
You know, that's, I feel like that's my mission on this planet, is to show people that you don't need to eat that way. And then, you know, they can figure it out themselves. I mean, I don't, you know, a lot of the stuff that I write in my books or teach or whatever, I mean, they're not the things that I eat every day, because I eat very, very simply on a daily basis.
So tell me, what's a typical... daily consumption, you know, meal set that you would have, just for people who are looking for, you know, ideas about, like, or everyday.
Oh, it's very on everyday cooking. It's very boring. Every morning I have either some sort of green smoothie or a green juice. So that, you know, it's pretty much all raw and just fruits and veggies for breakfast. And then lunch, I usually have either some kind of either some sort of big salad, or I eat a bunch of. I cook some vegetables up and maybe throw some beans or some grains in it. Very boring. And then dinner, that's when the family gets together. I'll try to cook something a little bit more interesting every night. But we also have a few nights a week, I will do something that's just called our vegetable dinner, where we mainly just eat vegetables, just to kind of keep our diets light and so we don't overindulge. And then, you know, some other night we might, and then other nights we'll have something that's a little bit more indulgent. I don't have any rules, but I would say that, you know, my diet is mainly fruits and vegetables and grains with some legumes in there.
So when you say boring, do you mean it's boring to eat or just sort of boring to describe and listen to?
Oh, I would say it's boring to describe and listen to. It's not boring to eat for me. I mean, I love nothing but, you know, a plate of just some sautéed kale with some garlic and splash of soy sauce. I mean, that for me, that's heaven. I love eating that. That has more flavor to me than, I don't know. I mean, I recently had this, there's a new vegan chicken product on the market that's being touted by people like Mark Bittman as being just, you know, apparently in a blind taste test, he couldn't tell the difference between that and chicken. And I had some, and I thought, wow, it's so bland. Is this what chicken is like? Because I don't remember. It's been, you know, 30 years since I've had chicken. And someone said, yeah, chicken is actually pretty bland. It's like, well, if it's so bland, I mean, there's so much more flavor in a plate of kale or broccoli, to be honest. Yeah, that's got so much more flavor. I mean, I could eat I'm happy eating a big plate of well-prepared vegetables or a ratatouille or, or some sort of chickpea curry or something. That to me has a lot more flavor. When I cook for omnivores, I do try to reach out to the flavors that are a little bit more familiar, however, just to, you know, make that transition a little bit easier for them. But, is it boring for me to eat? No, it's not, you know, a lot of the stuff.
Yeah, because that's my experience too. I'll have, you know, a smoothie every morning, and I get very excited about them. I'll get up. I'll start. I'll do some exercises. Maybe I'll meditate, take a shower, and all the while I'm just like, my reward is going to be this smoothie. It's probably the same one I've had 40 times in the past 3 months, and I'm still like really excited about it.
Yeah, and not only that, but you feel good afterwards, and that's the thing that, you know, there's a lot of people, I've been having this discussion with more vegans lately, but there's this growing crowd of young vegans that are celebrating veganism by eating as much vegan junk food and processed, you know, vegan junk food as possible. And, you know, they're heavy, and they don't seem to be disturbed by the fact that, you know, they're 300 pounds or whatever. And everyone has the right to be whatever size they are. But I do want to say that that's not the diet that I want to promote. I mean, I want to be the example of that vibrant, energetic, healthy vegan that's got the energy to do all this stuff. Because when you put, you know, it doesn't matter if it's vegan or if it's full of animal products, it's junk in, is junk out. And you can't continue even fighting for animals or for, you know, for the environment if you're tired all the time, if you're, you know, if you're carrying all that extra weight and you're feeling sluggish. I mean, at some point you're going to burn out and you're not going to be able to put up that good fight that you want for, you know, the animals, which is why you're eating, you know, vegan food instead of, regular food.
And as we write about in Whole, you know, everyone's heard the Chief Seattle quote, "What you do to the earth, you do to yourself." We feel like the opposite is also true. Whatever you do to yourself, you do to the earth. You know,
right.
Even if you're eating a vegan diet that's full of processed foods and inappropriate, you know, amounts of stuff, you know, you're part of it. It's not like you can separate yourself out and be holy to everything else but yourself.
Right. And I'm not trying to be judgmental towards, you know, those that choose to eat primarily processed food. And if you're transitioning from an omnivore diet to a vegan diet and you just find it easier to eat more processed food, you know, I mean, that's still a step in the right direction because it's less environmental impact and it's still healthier. But, you know, just overall, the more we eat real food, the more we actually get into our kitchens and cook from scratch, the better it is not only for our health but the planet. There's less waste. There's less, you know, energy put into producing those foods. It's better for the animals because we'll be there long enough, you know, be around long enough to help them. So...
Yep. Well, it's, you know, everything, yeah. Everything comes down to, you know, what do you want out of life? And, you know, all your decisions, including your eating decisions, you know, can be reduced to that. And, you know, for me, the tragedy I see is people either don't ask the question or are so confused by media that they don't think there's any relationship to what I put in my mouth and what I want out of life.
Right. You're right. I agree with you. I mean, when you are healthy, you get a lot more out of life. I mean, I just know that, you know, there was a period of my life when I ate a lot more vegan junk food, you know, than I do today. And, you know, I get that 4 o'clock low, you know, 4 o'clock, I just would need that coffee fix to get me back on my feet and stuff. And after I started eating more of a whole foods plant-based diet, I just found that I had a lot more energy. Now, I didn't need that pick-me-up and, you know, mid-afternoon pick-me-up or snack or a coffee drink or whatever. There's so much more I can do because of that. Not only that, but it affected my mental health. I mean, I think I became happier. I would have less, instances of depression because I don't think I had the mood swings from, you know, the sugars and the caffeine and all of that stuff too. I mean, not to say that I never indulge, because I think indulgence is occasional indulgence should be something in everyone's life, you know, because we can't be too serious about food either. I mean, that's the other thing I caution against is, I mean, people that are just so obsessed with everything they put into their mouth, you know, it's the extreme opposite of the processed food vegan is the vegan that's like, oh, I can't eat that because it's got this in it or that in it, and I, you know, I can only eat some blah, blah, blah. I mean, you can just go overboard and become absolutely miserable because you're watching everything you put in your mouth. And when you're miserable, you can't absorb the nutrients either. So, I mean, hey, lighten up, you know. Have an occasional brownie. What's the big deal if you have it once in a while, you know? But it should be, in moderation. It should be an occasional treat like it used to be 100 years ago. I mean, we didn't have snacks every single day. We had it once in a while. You had birthday cake on people's birthdays, not, you know, every day at school because somebody brings a big, you know, parents bring birthday cakes to school every day.
Right.
So I think there's a time and place for all of that stuff. I think there's a time and place to indulge. But, you know, take the time and take the place. Don't make it every day, everywhere.
Right. And I think, you know, a lot of people wonder, like, how do I have the willpower to eat the way I eat? And in my experience, the more I pay attention to cause and effect, the less important willpower becomes. It's like, you know, how do I have the willpower to not hit myself over the head with a hammer? It's like, well,
yeah, well,
pretty
to
easy.
Me, I mean, I don't think it required any willpower on my part. I mean, the only change I made in my diet when I transitioned to a whole foods plant-based diet was I just started eating more vegetables and fruit. Instead of starting my day with a slice of toast, I just decided I'm going to just start my day with a smoothie. And, you know, and as soon as I started incorporating more foods that were nutrient-rich, I just found I didn't have a craving for the other stuff. And it just sort of went away. So I can walk into a vegan bakery and I'll feel like, okay, I'm here in this, you know, I'm here in this city, and so I should try this, but I'm not really craving anything.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, if I had gone into a vegan bakery in the past, I'd be like, oh my God, okay, I gotta have this, I gotta have that again.
So yeah, in whole, I've been thinking more and more about, you know, the bigger picture, the context, and even the bigger picture of whole plant-based food eating. It's really, you know, it's a lot about consciousness, about if you're, one of my favorite lines ever was from John Robbins' Diet for a New America, which I read in 1990 and really not since. And the line I remember is, better Franks and beer with thanks and cheer than sprouts and bread with doubts and dread.
I remember that, and it's absolutely true. I agree, too. I mean, there's attitude, and, yeah, attitude is so much of it, you know, and how you feel, whether you experience joy in the food or not. It's so true. I've met so many vegans that are kind of have gone overboard in thinking of food mainly as a source of nutrients. And not of joy.
Yes.
And we lose everything when we forget that food is there to nourish not only our bodies but our souls. And it brings us together. And nobody wants to break lousy bread together. You want to make, you know, we want bread that's like, oh my God, that's so good, give me another piece. So we have to remember that, you know, that food is something that brings people together. It's something that people are supposed to celebrate together. And it's not just to, you know, get your nutrients. You probably aren't, if that's how you're looking at it.
Right. I remember one study I read about was looking at people who, two groups of people, and I think maybe it was from Thailand and the U.S., and they were each given a meal from each, like sort of a typical meal they would eat, and it was identical. And some biomarker measurements, they found that each group got more nutrients out of the meal they were used to than the other group.
Oh, right, yeah. In fact, there's all kinds of studies that have been done about various things, like, you know, if you dine alone, apparently you don't absorb as many nutrients as you do if you're dining in a group. Or if you're standing up, you don't absorb as much as if you're sitting down, because that means you're more tense, you're not as relaxed. So there's a lot of things that affect nutrient absorption, you know, or state of mind.
Huh. I have to look those up. I hadn't heard of those.
Yeah.
Well, we've gone full circle in our conversation. I'm really glad to know you and so grateful that you took the time to talk with me today. So for people who are looking for more of your amazing, not every day, but, you know, wow the pants off of your Omnivore Friends cookbooks, if you can find them at artisanveganlife.com. They're on Amazon. And you're also going to be at the Vegetarian Summer Fest around Pittsburgh in July, right?
Absolutely, and I'll be doing a demo on making homemade vegan cheese. So,
yeah. Right. So if anyone's got the July 4th weekend available and you want to learn from the cheese master, I think it's vegetariansummerfest.org. You can go there and register for that. So, Miyoko, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
Howard, it was a delight. It was wonderful meeting you at Vegan Con, and I look forward to seeing you again.
Me too. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's take this home with some gratitudes. First of all, thanks to Mama Earth. You have been so very, very good to me. Second, Will Ridenour donated the use of his beautiful song Savali Dawn as the theme music for this show. You can find out more about Will's music at willridenour.com. Third, thanks to all the patrons of the Plant Yourself podcast for your financial support. You can read the names of all the patrons at any show notes at plantyourself.com. If you would like to become a patron to show your gratitude for the work I'm doing and help support it, you can do so at plantyourself.com/gift. That's G-I-F-T, all lowercase. And finally, I want to thank you, the listener, for making all of this possible, for giving me a reason to reach out to people, to have conversations, to edit, produce, publicize, all the stuff that I do is for you, so that we can continue to have conversations and continue to ripple out healing and transformation into the world.